Hello, we're Muckle LLP, a highly successful full-service commercial law firm based in Newcastle upon Tyne in the north of England. We support businesses, organisations and individuals all over the UK and beyond. And with this podcast series, we share business insight and practical tips to help you with the full spectrum of commercial law.
Welcome to this podcast. We're Muckle LLP, commercial law firm in Newcastle upon Tyne. My name's Robin Adams and I'm a partner in the commercial team here at Muckle. And I'm joined today by my colleague Luke Donnickley, who's a solicitor in the same team. Hi, Luke.
Hello.
Today, we wanted to explore in a little more detail what it means to trade on WTO terms, a phrase which we've all seen in the press and in the news. And I wanted to begin by asking Luke to just briefly tell us what is the WTO and what are its rules.
Yeah, so thank you, Robin. Basically, you'll have heard of WTO rules, World Trade Organization rules. There's something that's come up in conversation, in the national conversation, quite a lot over the last couple of months and couple of years, particularly through the EU referendum. But you may not know what they mean. And so I suppose to sum up in a nutshell, they're a set of rules which define and in some cases limit how one World Trade Organization member, so one WTO member, can trade with another WTO member. So they deal with things like tariffs and quotas, which I'm sure is something that we'll come on to a little later on. It's important to remember that WTO rules are used in the absence of anything else. So, for instance, we don't rely on them in our trade with the EU, because we're members of the single market and the customs union. And by the way, you can find out a bit more about those subjects in an earlier podcast, which is available on our website. We also don't rely on WTO rules where we already have the benefit of a free trade agreement. But they are becoming an issue now, because if we leave the EU without a deal, by which we mean a free trade deal, we'll be reliant on WTO rules to negotiate our, to regulate our trading relationship with other EU countries. So in effect, what I want you to think about here is that the World Trade Organization rules, essentially, they fill a vacuum that's left by a lack of an agreement on trade. And similarly, the WTO rules will regulate our relationship with all other WTO members. That's pretty much most nations where there's no free trade agreement in place.
But we already have free trade agreements with other countries like South Korea and Japan. So how does that impact on the WTO position?
Sure, we do have those trade agreements already, but we have to be careful here when we talk about our free trade agreements. So there's free trade agreements such as ones that of today's date we have the benefit of as EU members, because remember, we're in a transition period. We've left the EU, but we're still in the single market and the customs union, and that means we still have the benefit of all of those free trade agreements that the EU, not us, the EU has signed with other countries. And our participation in these free trade agreements ends on the 31st of December 2020. And after that, we're completely reliant on trade deals that we sign ourselves. So the distinction I'm drawing there is, at the minute, if we want to trade with Canada, we have the benefit of trading under the EU's trade agreement with Canada. After the 31st of December, we would have to sign our own trade deal with Canada, but we don't have one in place. And if we don't have one in place, as it stands, if on the 1st of January there's still no trade deal in place, we would be trading on WTO rules with Canada and with any other country where there's no free trade agreement. Now, the government's been doing this. They've been negotiating these agreements quite hard, and we'll discuss this in a moment, but it'll obviously take some time for the UK to replicate all of those trade deals that that the EU has and which the UK has the benefit of once we leave. And remember, there's 40-odd years of the EU negotiating trade relationships which we partake in. So this certainly won't happen overnight. And that's especially so given that the UK has zero experience of negotiating a trade deal because the EU does it for us. Essentially the EU does the heavy lifting for us at the moment, and we're going to have to do it ourselves soon. So I guess the long and short of it is that in the absence of a free trade agreement between the UK and one of its trading partners after the end of the transition period, WTO rules will almost certainly apply. Barriers to trade will increase, and commerce probably will largely become more difficult unless and until we get a free trade agreement with that country in place.
And how big an issue is that in financial terms, Luke? Or to put it another way, what do we lose if we can no longer trade freely with, say, Belgium or France?
Yeah. So this is an interesting point. What you can't really do is take one EU state in isolation. So, for example, Belgium or Germany or France, and say, what do we lose here? Because what we're losing is easy access to a whole block. It's to 27 nations. And to sort of throw light on that point, the EU accounts for about 49% of our export trade, and another further 11% through using EU free trade agreements. So you might say, oh, well, if we leave the EU, we're not going to suffer a huge hit because we won't be able to trade with Belgium. Belgium's not a big partner. But when you take the EU as a block, the EU is our most important by economic size, our most important trading partner. Something like 60% of our trade is facilitated by EU rules. So we won't necessarily lose all of that trade, of course, but it'll just become that much harder if we leave or when we leave the EU.
Okay, so if we end up on WTO rules, what does that mean for us? What do the rules actually provide?
Well, as you'd expect, they're pretty complex, but at the heart of it is something that they call the most favoured nation principle. So what this means in practice is that a WTO member can't treat one WTO member more favourably than another unless they agree to that more favourable treatment as part of a direct agreement between the parties, so a free trade agreement. So the UK couldn't reduce a tariff to zero for, say, Mexico, but not for Brazil, unless it had reduced the tariff to Mexico to zero as part of a free trade agreement. So in the absence of free trade agreements, everybody must be treated equally. We'll consider the practical effect of that in a bit, but this pretty much makes WTO rules the lowest common denominator. They're where you'd land in the absence of a free trade agreement. And you know, we discussed in an earlier podcast why you can't just essentially copy and paste our current trade rules as negotiated by the EU for our new trading relationships, though of course they can be used as a starting point, but effectively we're having to start again and negotiate those free trade agreements. Now, at the time of this podcast, there's around 20 free trade agreements that the UK has managed to negotiate, some of which are significant in economic terms for the UK. So there's a UK agreement upcoming with South Korea. There's one with Switzerland. There's one with Iceland and Norway. The UK-Japan trade deal, which has been agreed recently, is expected to boost trade between the UK and Japan by about £15 billion a year. But bear in mind, that's about 0.07% of UK GDP. If you look at that list, and that list is constantly updated, by the way, you can get it off gov.uk, and you'll find that although it's great, we've got 20 trade deals, you've got to look at who some of those trade deals are with. So on top of those sort of relatively significant ones I've talked about, we've got trade deals upcoming with the Faroe Islands, with Kenya, with Kosovo, with the Lebanon, Liechtenstein, the Pacific States. Now, without wishing to diminish the importance of those deals, because obviously they'll be of huge benefit to some companies, let's just think about who's missing from that list. You know, most obviously is the EU. We don't have a free trade agreement in place yet with the EU. So as time goes on and no free trade agreement is agreed, if we get to the 1st of January and that's the case, we are out on WTO rules, and that they will be the rules that govern our relationship with the EU. That's the same for the USA, the so-called BRIC nations, so Brazil, Russia, India, China, and so on. So clearly, with these countries, the WTO will govern our relationship, that will be the case until a free trade agreement's put in place. So I guess it's worth pointing out that even if an EU free trade agreement is agreed, even if we leave on the 1st of January and we've got a deal and we're not on World Trade Organization terms, the World Trade Organization is still going to be important to your business, because we will be trading more and more with countries outside of the EU. That is part of the point of Brexit. You will be encouraged to go away and try and break into markets in China and India and wherever else to pick up the slack of the trade that we've lost. And where there's no free trade deal, you will be trading on WTO terms and you'll need to know something about those terms.
So in terms of tariffs, Luke, what will the position look like under WTO rules, and what will the position look like in terms of UK businesses trading with European businesses?
Sure. So let's have a think about what a tariff is. A tariff is essentially imposed to protect a particular industry. Okay. So the more sensitive an industry is, the greater its strategic importance, the more likely you are to have a tariff to that particular good. So put another way, the UK is likely to have tariffs on things like dairy and beef products because it has a dairy industry, a big agricultural industry to protect. Similarly with things like cars and high-tech equipment, but you're probably not going to need a tariff on something like cotton because we don't produce it. You're going to want that to be tariff-free so you can get it into your country easily. So for the EU, the tariffs they impose are basically called the common external tariff. So each country in the EU has to impose exactly the same tariff on exactly the same goods coming in from third countries, that's countries outside of the EU, unless the EU has a free trade agreement. But we're talking about leaving with a no deal. So in the event of a Brexit where no free trade agreement is signed, what that means is that your current partners in the EU, say you deal with a business in France, you trade at the minute without a tariff, come the 1st of January, they will have to impose the common external tariff on products they import from your business in the UK. It averages about 3.2%, that tariff, but that hides some pretty wild variations. So on some products, there's a 0% tariff. On other products, it's well over 100%. It can be quite enormous. Depends on the industry that the EU is trying to protect. The UK can set its own tariffs, and where the EU sets a tariff, the UK, you might say, is quite likely to match that tariff. So there was a suggestion some months ago that the UK might choose to set 0% tariffs on all EU goods in the event of a no deal, at least for a short while, in order to ensure that supply chains aren't disrupted and trade with countries in the EU continues to flow in the event of a no deal. So the idea that you wouldn't want to suddenly impose tariffs on companies that haven't had to pay them in the past, because they wouldn't have wanted that to choke off UK businesses. But remember that most favoured nation principle we talked about. If we as a country, in the event of a no deal Brexit, decided to reduce our tariffs to 0% for goods coming in from the EU, we'd have to do that for every WTO member. Because remember, the EU as a bloc is a WTO member, so you treat the bloc as in the same way that you treat, say, Brazil. And so if you reduce your tariff protection to zero for EU goods, you reduce your tariff protection to zero for every other WTO member in the world. And of course, what that might lead to is a flood of cheap imports that might completely overwhelm UK producers.
And does the most favoured nation principle only apply in relation to tariffs? Or does it have wider effect?
It has a wider effect. It's a great sport, really, because it also applies to all those non-tariff barriers. And actually, a lot of producers are more worried about the effect of non-tariff barriers than they are with the actual effect of tariffs. So to give an example, if the UK chose to disapply a particular non-tariff barrier on the EU, say perhaps the requirement that UK goods meet a certain standard, we'd have to do this for all WTO members. So again, in the event of a no-deal Brexit 1st of January, you might not want to check EU goods at the borders. And you might think, well, that's very sensible because we know their products are exactly the same standards as ours, because at the minute we all have the same product standards and that's not going to change overnight until the 1st of January. It might be an issue 2, 3, 4 years down the line. But we don't need to check them right now because they're the same standard. If we don't check them, we don't have those clogging up of the border, trade smoothly flows in the event of a no deal. But of course, if we don't check stuff coming in from the EU, we have to apply that across all nations. We can't check stuff coming in from India or China. And you you'd be faced with the potential for a flood of cheap imports in that scenario that wouldn't necessarily meet our standards, but you'd have no way of regulating that. So it doesn't just apply to tariffs, it applies much more widely.
So a potential issue there in terms of reconciling different product standards depending on where products have come from. What happens, Luke, if there's a trade dispute? How would that be resolved?
Well, see, that's potentially really a thorny issue because it's something that's not spoken about a lot. And I think it's because the role of the Court of Justice of the European Union is just not really understood, or certainly from a legal perspective, it's not appreciated. But currently, as we are, you know, we're still within the structures of the EU and still working to their rules, in the event of a dispute between the UK and, say, France, or between a UK producer and the country of France, or for that matter, between a UK producer and a French producer, you could go to the Court of Justice of the European Union. And the Court of Justice of the European Union, CJEU, will enforce the rules of the single market. So it just gives certainty and it gives a legal remedy to people who are within the EU. There isn't a similar body for the World Trade Organization, and that's because only governments are members of the World Trade Organization. So if you have an issue with a producer in France post-Brexit, and we're on WTO terms, you would have to basically go to the government of the UK and say, I have this particular issue and need you to bring it up with the WTO. Now, that is an astonishingly expensive thing to do. And also, they're not going to want to do that. They're not going to want to get involved in low-level disputes or disputes that they feel aren't particularly important. The extent to which you can enforce WTO rules as opposed to the rules of the single market might become a real problem for your business.
So trading on WTO rules sounds like it might be inflexible in some ways, not least because of the most favoured nation principle, but also because of difficulties perhaps in resolving trade disputes. We've heard quite a lot in the press about a Canada-style trade deal with the EU and also an Australian-style deal. What do we mean by those two terms?
Yeah, so a Canada-style agreement would be seen as a relatively positive result, I think, because the EU and Canada have a relatively comprehensive trading relationship. But what we're often told is, well, look, if we don't get a Canada-style deal, we'll get an Australian-style deal. And I guess the question really there is, what does that mean? And I think the answer is, unfortunately, not a great deal. Australia has some discrete deals on fairly niche areas with the EU that reduce friction in very, very narrow ways, but it doesn't have a comprehensive free trade agreement. So it's sort of like saying we'd have an American-style free trade agreement. Well, there's no such thing. What we have in America is lots and lots of side agreements that cover a range of sectors that are intended to reduce friction. So an Australian-style deal is not a deal, a free trade agreement, as most people would understand it. Really, being kind, when the government talks about an Australian-style deal, it's talking about something slightly better than WTO rules, but we would be reliant on WTO rules for a lot of our trade.
Thanks, Luke. So in summary then, WTO rules might soon govern our trading relationship with our most important, in economic terms at least, trading partner, and will govern our trading relationship with most other countries unless and until we can agree a free trade agreement either with the EU or with the relevant other country.
Yeah, and that's absolutely what we've got to look forward to for 2021 and beyond. But to help you prepare for a no deal or indeed a limited trade deal with the EU, look out for some more podcasts on that, and they'll be put up on our website in the near future.
That's the end of this discussion. We hope you found it useful. As always, if there are any questions you have arising from the points that we've covered, do please get in touch. We'd be very pleased to hear from you. It remains for me to thank Luke for his contribution today. Thank you, Luke.
No problem. Thank you.
And as Luke says, please look out for further installments in this series. And thank you for listening.